Diversity Music Group. Alex H. Alex H. The Bomb Factory. Success.
Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to properly introduce the most incredible beast from the east, live and live in color. NJ fitted to leather and soft butter. Color up, my dollars up, I'm winning exotic cars to women, women and more women. More sinning, I'm addicted to success. Blessed, young and gifted, the bar's been lifting. Started from the bottom, I'm now on top of the world. Look, ma, I made it, the new most hated. Underestimated since I haven't been painting. Our stories aren't related, so they don't believe. But who cares, I'ma run a few years before I fade to black. My impacts shift back to order to lyrical manslaughter. In the first degree, I am king. Young, young, fresh, fresh.
Holidays. Guess what? Hey, I'm Thursday. Guess who's back? That's right. It's your boy, Joseph Haas. Host, Green and White Show, episode 188. Hope everybody's having a great holiday season so far. November, it's a wrap. That's it. Just a few weeks left until we can toast the new year, 2018, almost upon us. I hope everybody's enjoying their breaks, the long weekend. Hey, guess what? No more breaks in the NFL. That's right. We're getting the full slate of NFL games. We're going to talk about that. Some hearts broken as far as college football is concerned. You know that. Yeah, I'm talking to guys in Alabama, a few out in Miami. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more. Can't wait to get the Reverend Ralph Mancini on a little later in the program for the Mancini Report so we can crush the NFL. Full slate of games, as I said. We'll talk about the Thursday games as well. Hope everybody got a chance to enjoy those Thursday games. Those home teams, not so much. Okay, we'll hit the flight plan. First 15 minutes, you know it's on me. I hit you with the first 15. Then our buddy Reverend Ralph Mancini floats on in from Lombardi Ave. He hits you from LombardiAve.com, of course. The Reverend Ralph Mancini will drop the Mancini Report on us. We'll hit you a little NFL. We'll talk about the top teams, bottom teams. Hey, a present under the tree of the Kansas City Chiefs a little early. He may not play this week, but guess what? Next week against the Jets, we will see Darrelle Revis. That's right. Did we think we'd be talking about Darrelle Revis on this podcast again, other than the Hall of Fame? Let's get into the first 15. Are you ready to talk some football? I'm ready to talk some football. Are you ready to talk some football? Or what? Real sports talks media on a political tip with an underground appeal to it. That's right, folks. It is your Green and White Show. Back and, well, I guess I can say back and better than ever since they're not saying it anymore, right? Yeah, shout out and peace, RIP, to the Mike and Mike Show. That's a show that I listened to for such a long time and obviously would influence some of the things that I would say and do here as well. Just a long-standing, well, a staple. But it became a show that became a little stale. And I guess they figured out it got stale. And I can't wait to see what Golic and Ringo do and what Greeny does out on his new adventure. We all know Big Mike out on WFAN is going to be hanging up his mic soon. So a lot of changes as far as the radio world is concerned. Well, I'll be here for it for you as well. Let's get started with UFC. Michael Bisping, one of the loudest mouth champions that we've had over the past year at UFC. Now, after back-to-back losses, first-round KO at UFC Japan just the other night, live the other night at 3 in the morning. That's going to be it for Michael Bisping. He's going to announce his retirement at an event which was already scheduled in Manchester. So about March 17th or so is when this event is scheduled. Michael Bisping will fight there, his last fight. He will retire from the UFC. And not exactly dominant. The Michael Bisping era won't be remembered as a dominant era as far as being a light heavy is concerned. As far as him having to fight on such short notice after a loss as well, losing his belt and turning around and fighting, you know, brave move on his part. And he's always accepted challenges. It was great to get a headline card right after losing your belt. But more concerned with Anderson Silva, possible doping violation, which is why Michael Bisping had to step up and take that fight early. So a lot to look at as far as that's concerned. You know, you love these fights, and I love that next week we're going to get another great UFC battle. But, you know, you just always have to watch for these doping scandals and who's fighting and who's not, and who's going to get their fight disqualified because of a positive test down the road. I'm still a little irked about the Bones Jones disqualification. It's just, you get to see some of these great fights, and then you turn around and you hear that. That's what I love when I hear, you know, you see these great fights that happen. You see the three champions go down in the UFC, and you're excited for it, and then you have to wait a couple of days to make sure that the tests come back negative. So we'll all bid adieu to Michael Bisping and the Michael Bisping era in the UFC. He does a lot of great work behind the desk. I'm sure we'll see a lot more of him behind the desk now. We'll put the UFC away at least a little bit for this week and get into the fights going on the college football gridiron. Yeah, we also saw Lamar Jackson tussling with the entire team on Saturday. Louisville, not in the playoff fight, but teams that were in the playoff fight maybe until just yesterday. The good undefeated team from the University of Miami, that's right, you don't spell undefeated with the U anymore. They've gone down Friday night, terrible defeat and lack offense, lack of everything. Just, you know, that looked like a team that's read its own press clippings, and a Pitt team lethargic all year, not really a challenging team all year. Guess what? We're able to pull off the W and enjoy a post-Thanksgiving feast courtesy of the visiting University of Miami Hurricanes. TCU continues to roll. They'll go ahead and play Oklahoma again. A lot more going on. What's up with Virginia and Virginia Tech? That's always a tussle, no matter how bad both teams are doing. Virginia Tech able to roll Virginia, shut them out again. I mean, I swear, it's almost like every other year they're shutting out Virginia in that battle at the end of the season. Let's get to some of the top teams that went down. Like I said, Alabama and Iron Bowl goes down to Auburn. Auburn, do they have a shot at the championship? We shall see, but after toppling Alabama, might be a problem that Alabama doesn't have a great strength of schedule. It's not really a great win for Auburn, and that's the problem here. I mean, well, we've talked about the teams that Alabama's really rolled. What, a top LSU, not even a top LSU team. The best win is against an LSU team that was struggling at the time, and they played them. Best team they played, they get spanked by Auburn. Does their thing against Alabama. It was tough watching Ohio State as well. Wow, that kid comes off the bench and really helps JT Barrett. Another loss for Michigan. Man, I can't remember the last time Michigan beat Ohio State. It's been a while. Oklahoma does their thing. Baker Mayfield, what a character he is. Comes off the bench, lights it up. Not the start of the game, but still doing his thing in Wisconsin. Well, I thought Minnesota's defense was going to play in this game. They probably didn't even. I mean, wow. What a dominant performance by one of the only undefeated teams left in college football. How about another undefeated team left in college football? University of Central Florida. You know what? They are a very interesting team to watch, especially with their head coach, Scott Frost. As teams around the league make their coaching changes. We might as well get into that here on the Green and White Show at Jersey Hawks on Twitter, Jersey Hawks NFL on Instagram. Make sure you check us out, hashtag GAWS on Twitter. Hit the moments for this and all past shows. Now, as far as the NCAA football coaching carousel is concerned, Chip Kelly is back in college football. UCLA makes the move. They fired Jim Mora last week and replaced him quickly with Chip Kelly, who was sitting out there, and some thought that Florida was a place he would land. There are other places that openings could arise, so a team that knew what they wanted went out and did the damn thing. As they say, the UCLA Bruins will now have the offensive mind of Chip Kelly back in college football. Another possible moves, Texas A&M possible move, Florida possible move, lots of stuff going on as far as college football is concerned. Some of the moves that might need to be made. Well, I never understand why Notre Dame is getting so much credit for lackluster performances. Their offense was putrid last night against a Stanford team that rolled them, completely dominated them. And when it counted in the fourth quarter, crushed them with 21 points. It wasn't a contest. It might have been a battle of back and forth a little early. First quarter definite power running game by both teams, but Stanford flex tight ends is always that team. Just the way they use their tight ends in blocking and can leak them out for pass plays, just another dominant performance by a Stanford team that looks to be headed to the Pac-12 championship, and one more win might get themselves a nod. But with three losses, it doesn't look like they're going to get into the championship games, the top four, but they could get themselves into one of the next four games. So good luck for Stanford, shaking that tree as they do. Already talked about the Buckeyes doing their thing against Michigan, Penn State. I think they're still scoring against Maryland right now. Somewhere Robin Lundberg is shedding a tear for his Maryland Terrapins as Penn State fell off 66 and counting. Still trying to keep themselves in the hunt. I'm still skeptical about that Ohio State thing. If Ohio State or Alabama still somehow sneak their way into the championship four, it would be a disservice to one of the teams that really fought hard to get in there. I just can't see how an Ohio State team that's looked shaky all year, I just don't see how they deserve it. And like I said before, Alabama hasn't played anybody this season. All right? Michigan State does their thing and closes out line. My Rutgers at 4-8. Four great wins. We won more games against Big Ten teams this season than we'd ever won before. So a little bit of a pat on the back for Chris Ash, a little bit of a future there from the St. Peter's Prep Jersey City kid. We'll see what he can do next year as well. A mention of coaches that will be making moves. Mike Riley no longer at Nebraska. A move could be made there. I mentioned Scott Frost earlier in the show. Could be going there. I remember seeing Scott Frost play football. My goodness. I just saw the manager of the year, and I remember him playing baseball. With a picture of him means I'm getting old. How old is Paul Molitor? That's the way I'm transitioning into baseball before we get into football. You're on the Green and White Show at Jersey Ozzo on Twitter, Joseph Fox NFL on Instagram. Don't forget hashtag GAWS. Let me get the manager of the year voting out of the way. All right, the NL, it was pretty simple for the Diamondbacks manager, but Paul Molitor to come out of nowhere, the Twins, in my opinion, just to see his picture. Man, I watched that guy play great years for the Braves. Let's go AL and NL Rookie of the Year because, well, they were obviously unanimous. Aaron Judge and Cody Bellinger dominated this year and were easy choices for Rookies of the Year. We got the Cy Youngs. Corey Kluber, the Indians, over Chris Sale. And it wasn't even close as far as first place votes are concerned. Max Scherzer taking over Clayton Kershaw. Again, not really a contest there. Lots of blowouts as far as these votings are concerned. Not so when it comes to the NL MVP. Okay? Jose Altuve by far first. But to believe that Aaron Judge came in second, that was pretty impressive for the rookie. Giancarlo Stanton, Don't Call Me Mike, wins the NL MVP with a great flooding performance. And man, I really thought he was going to touch those records. But a great job by Giancarlo Stanton to win the NL MVP by just 2 points. That's the closest that I've seen in quite a while. So that's your MLB roundup. Let me give you some quick hits on the NHL before we get into the revving up in City on the Green and White Show. Now, I'm not interested in Ovechkin's hat trick last night. I've talked about him as far as a regular season player is concerned. He's moving up as far as top scorers is concerned. He plays an outstanding game. He's tough. He's gritty. He leads his guys. Regular season games, he's outstanding. And again, he's manning before the first championship. He's got to win one. He's got to do this through a playoff series. I'm watching him play this regular season. He'll put up his 55 to 60 goals. He'll score all those points. He'll get his Capitals to a 1 or 2 seed, and they'll lose in the first round or get swept in the second round of the playoffs because that's what the Washington Capitals do. So Ovechkin can keep it on. But until he's doing what Sidney Crosby and the Pittsburgh Penguins are doing, they're not getting as much love as those guys are. And the Penguins with another dominant performance on the ice. Hey, even the Sharks showed a little love last night, putting up a few goals, 4-0 account. Go ahead with the San Jose Sharks. I'm a happy guy when the Penguins and the Sharks put W's on the board. The Devils last night. That's right, keeping it local. For my boy Amiri, because you know how he likes it. The Devils last night, close one. Okay. This is something this team has consistently done. Big lead, drops them. Big lead, drops another one last night. Big lead, almost lose the game, this time not. How are those New York Rangers doing? How are those New York Islanders doing? We'll talk about them next week as we pass the puck around the ice. One last hit before we get our buddy the Reverend Ralph Mancini on for our NFL. Those Thursday games were impressive. Okay, I mean, we got kind of a dud in the late game because the Giants are more of a dud. But in terms of an exciting group of games, couldn't ask for anything better, especially for a first game. That was an interesting game to see Minnesota come out really dominate. But I know you can hear me talk about these games. Let's listen to our buddy from the Lombardi app, the Reverend Ralph Mancini, who joins us here for the Mancini Report each and every week. Reverend Ralph Mancini, my man. Follow him on Twitter at Reverend Ralph. Welcome to the program. Happy Sunday, man. It's been a while. How you doing?
Hey, man. How you doing? It's week 12. How are things?
Week 12. Can you believe that? I mean, no more buys. You know, no more buys, so we can't take the week off. We've got to come hard and heavy here on the Green and White Show. Three games on Thursday. Just leading into you with that conversation. Very impressed by what the Minnesota Vikings are doing. And so far, you know, this is what I always say about the Detroit Lions. Anytime you get the Detroit Lions in a primetime game, they stick the bit. It always is. I look up, I know they're playing a primetime game. Guess what? Bit spit. Minnesota doing their damn thing. So do you think a team that has already started two starting quarterbacks that aren't their starting quarterback this year still has a shot? It might end up starting a third quarterback this year, but could play a home Super Bowl game. What are your chances of that one, Reverend Mel?
That's a good question, and I don't think that the front office nor the coaching staff knows the answer to that question just yet. But what they do know is that so far Case Keenum has done a fantastic job of leading the team, of managing the team. And it's not just, you know, being a manager. He's made some plays here and there as well. I mean, here's a player that who is athletic in his own right. You know, he's not a sitting duck when, you know, he's faced with a pass rush. So, you know, he's not going to put up a lot of, 350 to 400 yard games. But he's not making mistakes. And as I said before, you know, if he's got to make a play outside of the pocket, he'll make it. He'll use his feet in that game against Detroit. He scored a touchdown with his legs as well. I think the key with Case Keenum is that the offensive line is also doing a great job of protecting him. So, you know, one of the major issues with this Minnesota team over the past couple of years was the fact that their offensive line wasn't any good. They weren't giving their quarterbacks enough time to make throws. I mean, even, last year with Sam Bradford, you know, he had a great completion percentage, but he was making a lot of those two-yard throws just because he didn't have time to scan the field. To go through his progressions. Well, this year, you know, they're giving the quarterback more time to stand back and to read his receivers. So, look, right now, Keenum is doing the job. They're going to stick with him, until he really falls on his face. So I like this Minnesota team from their coaching staff. I love their defense. They're a complete defense with players at all three levels. So, yeah, do I think this team can go far? Absolutely. I mean, in the NFC, I just look at it as a big mishmash of teams that, where I don't see a real dominant squad out there. I know the Philadelphia Eagles are probably the best out of the bunch. In terms of depth, in terms of star power, in terms of having that young quarterback who's taking that next step. But really, in the NFC, it could be any one of these teams, you know, whether it's the Rams, the Saints, and the Eagles or the Vikings. You know, I don't see one dominant force out there. So, yeah, the Vikings can certainly be one of those teams that that could be the Super Bowl representative from that conference come February.
Wow.
I can definitely see that.
Reverend Ralph Bennett, Joseph House here, Green and White Show, every Sunday, 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Here's a team that we how about three teams playing from one division on Thursday, the NFC East on display that Thursday with Dallas, the Giants, and the Redskins all playing. And wow, if it wasn't a putrid performance by two teams who were thought to be and not just near the top in terms of the division's concern, but they were a lot of people's contenders for, you know, big things this year. You know, I had the Giants in the Super Bowl, but both of them with horrible performances on Thursday. Ezekiel Elliott taking his 6-game suspension, 4 more to go in terms of that. McAdoo's tenure in New York looking shakier and shakier by the week, no matter whether he goes slick back hair or sunglasses. McAdoo looks not long for the Giants sideline. Players revolting in unspeakable ways as far as the Giants are concerned. These are two proud franchises, the Dallas Cowboys and the New York Giants, and they're taking a very serious hit this year. I want to know your thoughts on the state of the NFC East, and you know what? The team we didn't talk about, the team I didn't mention, the Philadelphia Eagles, with a game against the Chicago Bears to really go to 10-1 and dominate the division. I need to know your roundup right now on this very, very unstable NFC East.
Yeah, this is an interesting division. At the start of the year, we all had a hard time really identifying that one team that stood out above the rest, but it really, mm-hmm. This year it hasn't taken long for, the Philadelphia Eagles to emerge as that team, as that franchise. But, to sort of take these teams one by one, I would say that, with the Cowboys, it's really disappointing to see the fact that this team is just crumbling, without Ezekiel Elliott. They've had time to prepare for his absence. They knew what was coming down the pike, and still, this team just cannot get out of its own way, particularly on offense. And I think what you're seeing is that you're seeing the impact of Ezekiel Elliott when he's in the lineup, the impact that he has on the opposing defense. They have to put that extra guy in the box, mm-hmm. or the extra two players in the box when Ezekiel's in the lineup. And what that does is that, it allows Dez Bryant and Cole Beasley and Jason Witten to constantly go up against single coverage. And
right.
it's much easier to to beat your man in single coverage, to make plays down the field, and it's easier for the quarterback to identify which player to target when he drops back and he throws the ball. Now that instead of having Elliott back there, they have a guy like Alfred Morris, who really he's not that complete running back that Ezekiel Elliott is, and defenses now are double-teaming a guy like Dez Bryant. So that's the effect that it's having on the offense, and Cowboys haven't found a way. They haven't found a way to fight through that, and a lot of the blame has to go on the coaching staff. I know the players have to go out there and execute, but that also – a lot of the blame has to go on the coaching staff as far as that goes. And as far as the Giants go, I mean, we've talked about them a lot this season. And what we saw this past Thursday is a team that is, quite frankly, the defense is doing well. I mean, they're going out there. They're doing their job. For the most part, they're doing a decent job against the running game. A lot of their playmakers, they're coming up. They're having good games. I know Janoris Jenkins, he's hurt right now, but he's a guy who's bounced back in the past couple of weeks. Snacks Harrison is a player who is difficult to block as well. And then you have Landon Collins, who came up with a huge effort, 14 tackles, an interception. So, but the offense is just not there. I mean, it doesn't matter. You can have the 85 Bears defense playing for you, but if the offense isn't putting up points, then really your team's not going to go anywhere. They've had to deal with a lot of injuries, but even when their receivers were healthy, Brandon Marshall had to be one of the worst free agent signings of the year. He gave them absolutely nothing. Odell Beckham Jr., you know, he went down with an injury, and that totally crippled this offense as well. I thought they were overly dependent on Odell Beckham Jr. The offensive line really isn't very good. We talked about the limitations of Eli Manning in terms of, you know, his escapability or lack thereof. And, you know, that continues to be a problem. And where's the running game? I mean, again, we keep talking about it week after week, and they haven't been able to establish a running attack. So, you know, you combine all of those things together, and this is what you have, a team that most weeks is going to struggle, you know, to put up even, you know, double-digit points, you know. So, and a lot of this falls on the shoulders of Ben McAdoo, Ben McAdoo, excuse me. So, mm-hmm. I think his fate is sealed, and I think at the end of the year, he's a goner. And I don't know who the successor is going to be. I've heard rumors about maybe the Giants maybe bringing in somebody like Nick Saban, you know. Who knows? We're going to find out soon enough. And then who have you left out? The Washington Redskins. Oh, this is a team that I think should be better than their current record. But it's another team that's also has had to deal with some injuries themselves. You know, I think that with the Redskins, I think it's taken Kirk Cousins some time to adjust to, you know, some of the new guys in his offense. You know, I think exactly. The fact that Pierre Garçon is no longer there, the fact that DeSean Jackson is no longer there as that downfield vertical weapon, I think that has hurt Cousins during the early portion of the year. And now they're also dealing with another big injury, Chris Thompson, who became sort of that safety valve, that bread and butter guy. He's no longer there now. He's out for the season with an injury. So, I think a lot of those changes, it's taken some time for the offense to recover from those departures. And I think it's hurt this team. You know, the fact that they were counting on Terrell Pryor, you know, to be that big play receiver, and he hasn't shown up. And Jordan Reed, another player that for one reason or another cannot stay on the field. That's hurt them as well. So who knows? Who knows what's going to happen with this team? Will they finally sign Kirk Cousins to that long-term deal instead of franchising him? It remains to be seen. I would bring him back. I would sign him to whatever he wants. It's hard to find a franchise quarterback. And I know, he's not the next John Elway or Dan Marino or whatever. But you know what? Mm-hmm. He moves the ball. He puts the ball into the end zone. He's become a team leader. He's a solid guy off the field. I would definitely sign him to a long-term deal. The Redskins are not going anywhere either. And then you have the Philadelphia Eagles, a team that has drafted well, a team that is deep on the defensive side of the ball. They got playmakers on the defensive side of the ball. And on the offense, Carson Wentz is coming into his own. A kid who's athletic, makes plays outside of the pocket, but has also become a better quarterback inside of the pocket. He's got a gun of an arm. and now has some downfield weapons as well, has got a great running game, a solid offensive line. I mean, all the pieces are in place for the Philadelphia Eagles to go far this year. So, yeah, they're the class of the division, and I give a lot of credit to Howie Roseman, the GM, doing a great job of drafting, a great job of locking up his key players to long-term contracts, and the coaching staff also deserves kudos.
Mm. Reverend Ralph Via Lombardi at .com there at Jersey Odds. Great analysis on the NFC East. Let's not bury the lead here. One of the biggest games on the slate. New Orleans goes out to Los Angeles to challenge the Rams. This is a potential NFC championship matchup here. Both teams play extremely well. New Orleans on a roll. Los Angeles has been putting up points. A little hiccup in the road last week, but Los Angeles has been a team that's put up consistently 30-plus points. New Orleans has always been a team that's put up points. We'll see if they can travel that high-octane offense way west, playing outdoors. Biggest game on the schedule here. It's great to see all the teams playing. Your thoughts on two of the top teams in the NFL going at it out west?
Yeah, I think this is a big test for the Rams. They're a young team in terms of personnel, and they're a young team in terms of their head coach. He's a guy that he's still learning how to be a master play caller and how to be somebody. Like, for instance, last week, you know, they went into that Minnesota game averaging 32 points per contest, only scored 7 points against Minnesota. Now let's give the Vikings some credit for doing a terrific job against that high octane offense. But also, if you watch that game, Sean McVay went away from the plays that were actually gaining him yards for some reason. So you know, this game against New Orleans is going to give him an opportunity to stick with what's working, to identify what's going to be successful and what's not. So this is a big test for Jared Goff, but it's also a big test for Sean McVay. So I look for the Rams to bounce back here. Now, I know they're going to be missing Robert Woods, you know, which is going to be a huge loss, just because, you know, Woods has been their most consistent receiver all year. But they do have other weapons. They do have Cooper Kupp. They have Watkins. So I think that – and they have two good tight ends also, by the way, that they could utilize. So I think this is a great opportunity for the Rams to bounce back, and I think that they will make a statement this week.
I can see the Rams – this is a tough game here for young quarterback, young head coach – team really on a roll there, but with the hiccup last week, this could really be a setback for them if the New Orleans Saints are able to come in and put up a dominant performance in that home. Donovan McGang on the defensive side of the ball will need to assert themselves and really keep the Saints on their heels, not allow Drew Brees to get comfortable out there. If anything, the Los Angeles, you know, they could hope for weather, probably not going to get much weather, but you could always hope for some good weather there to help out the defense. But if the Saints continue to roll like they've been rolling, my only concern about the Saints is, you know, 8 wins in a row, you got to lose sometime. So this is one of those teams that could put up the points to put it out right next to that New Orleans. Now the Jets come off the bye, Rev, and they'll face a red-hot Carolina Panthers team. And the last time we talked about these Panthers, we were talking about Cam Newton and where the big plays. We're still not seeing as many as we're used to seeing, but he is getting better, and what a performance a couple of Thursdays ago. So he's showing in primetime games that he's a primetime type player. Cam Newton getting back on track. We'll play the Jets this Sunday. Jets probably reading the headlines, Rev, and seeing the Kansas City Chiefs pick up one of their old friends. And when you look at the schedule for next week, you'll see the Jets and the Chiefs playing each other. And if we all remember, the Jets are actually still paying Darrell Revis this year. So technically speaking, next week, Jets will be paying Darrell Revis to play against them in a Kansas City Chiefs uniform. Your thoughts on I can't remember this in the NFL, but this is going to be fun.
Yeah, yeah, it's going to be a reunion of sorts. but you know, look, the Kansas City Chiefs, they just, on the defensive side of the ball, they never recovered from the injury of, what's the name of the safety back there? The guy who went down week one.
And then the one who came back,
Eric Berry. There it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they never really recovered from the injury of Eric Berry, and so now they're bringing in Revis. I'm guessing they're going to bring him in to play some safety, maybe some cornerback. I'm not sure exactly what position they're going to bring him in to play. I would try him out at safety just because he has
That's
slowed down in recent years. But yeah, this Kansas City secondary is in shambles. You know, look, they still have guys up front that can get after the quarterback, but they're giving up way too many plays to opposing receivers. This Kansas City team, also on the offensive side of the ball, things that were working earlier in the year, it seems that like now defenses are catching up to what they're doing. A guy bringing in a guy like Revis, I don't think it hurts at all. Just because the secondary currently is doing such a poor job, I can't see Revis doing any worse. They're going to give him a week off. They're going to let him, you know, sort of get into shape. But you know what? I don't think Revis is going to need a long time to acclimate himself to his new surroundings because he already worked with Bob Sutton in the past, who's their defensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. So I think this is a low-risk type of acquisition that the Kansas City defense stands to benefit from. Now, you know, can they recover from their recent string of losses? Last week, we saw the limitations of Alex Smith when he goes into an environment where it's very windy, where it's very cold, and you know he just doesn't have the arm to make those passes into the teeth of a strong wind. And really, there was
Kansas
no
City
passing
in December.
I'm sorry,
but that's Kansas City in December. Like, I mean, those will be his home games if they get. They're probably hoping for.
Well,
those
you know,
playoffs.
Again,
this
is why they drafted Pat Mahomes. You know, I mean,
stronger arm, bigger gun. We talked about this.
Yeah, exactly.
Remember we talked
about
this at the beginning of the season. I thought they should get him some throws. I thought they should
you said
get
that.
Him some throws.
Yeah, yeah,
that,
you
that,
said
that,
that, and
that
you know that's a very complex offense.
Offense.
Andy Reid's offense is a complex offense to pick up for any rookie. So and you know Mahomes for all the natural ability he has, he's a bit on the raw side, and so I don't think we're going to see him this year. Barring, you know, any catastrophic injury to Alex Smith. But, yeah,
this
is what we've seen with the Kansas City Chiefs. They're limited on the offensive side of the ball, on the defensive side of the ball. They never recovered from the Eric Berry injury. They got to find a way to put the pieces together. And, yeah, you know what? It all starts this week. Can they do it? Yes, because their division's not very good. You know, and if they don't do it, you got a team like San Diego coming out of the woodwork, and they can make a run here now. You know, they're going to be coming off a 10-day rest off that win that they had against Dallas. Their next opponent is the Cleveland Browns. That should be another win in the bag. And so San Diego could be making a run.
We put a couple of pennies in the penny jar for Reverend Ralph as the Chargers have moved north to Los Angeles. Rev Ralph owes a couple of pennies for the penny jar there on the San Diego Chargers. I'm going to start collecting those from you. Let's go. We can't have you.
Did I call him San Diego?
You,
my bad.
Yeah, don't worry. we'll put a lump or two of coal a couple of weeks from now in stocking for you, buddy. We can't let you get out of here without talking about the guys from Green Bay. I know the move of quarterback, not something that they wanted to make, but they had to make. Getting trounced in Green Bay. Packers not looking anywhere near the team that we know they can be, and it all, of course, starts with Hundley. I saw you making an interesting comparison about Hundley on Twitter a little earlier in the week, and I wanted you to bring that to the show, Rev, if you could. Well, who is it that you think Hundley reminds you of, and do you really think that they're going to be able to go the rest of the season with this guy and get a win or two here?
Yeah, the player I compared him to was I said that Brett Hundley is a slightly more athletic version than Landry Jones, you know, the backup quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And the reason why I made that comparison is because those are two young players who really don't have any pocket presence. You know, it's like, yeah, they have the big gun. You know, they can make the big throws when their first receiver is open and they have to make a 50-yard pass down the field. They can do that, but you know, when things get tough, when that first target isn't open and they have to go through their progressions and they have to sidestep the blitzing defender that's trying to take them down. They're not always aware of what's going on around them, whether it's down the field or whether it's, a blitzer that's trying to sack them. So that's what we have with Brett Hundley, unfortunately. Somebody that, you know, was always talented, even back in college, coming out of high school, was a five-star recruit, a guy that's got the wheels to make plays with his legs. But a guy that looks a lot like a deer in the headlights. He's got that Sam Bradford look to him sometimes. A lot of times, actually. Last week, he was just a disaster last week against Baltimore. You know, he was sacked six times, and I'd say at least half of those sacks were his own doing, where he just hangs on to the ball. He's very nonchalant in the way he drops back. And just he's got no urgency about him in the pocket, hangs on to the ball. And sometimes he just throws these passes, not being aware of the safety that's got a beat on the ball. It's very discouraging that, you know, after 3 years, you would think Brett Hundley would be more advanced, you know, in terms of his field vision, in terms of his pocket presence, but it's just not happening for him. Now he's going to have another opportunity to perhaps show some level of improvement this week against the Pittsburgh Steelers. But this Pittsburgh Steelers defense is no joke. You know, they're ranked second overall in terms of points given up. They ranked second to the Jaguars in sacks. So this is a hungry Pittsburgh Steelers team, and they're coming off a 10 days rest. And they could get ugly out there for Brett Hundley.
I was going to say that
tonight. It could get ugly, and the only chance I give the Packers of keeping this game competitive is just leaning on the running game. And that means a young man called Jamal Williams. He's their only healthy running back at this point. He's going to have to. They're going to have to put the offense on his shoulders, and he's going to have to carry the ball about 25 to 30 times, and he's going to have to put up the performance of his life tonight against that Pittsburgh Steelers offense. That's the only chance they have, because what that's going to do is that's going to create some easy passing situations for Brett Hundley, you know, creating those situations where he only makes half field reads, you know, where they get him out on those bootlegs and he has those, you know, those easy passing opportunities for him to gain some confidence. So if they do that, they can make it close. Otherwise, if they allow the Pittsburgh Steelers to get off to the early lead, 14-0, 17-0, yeah, I don't see the Packers doing much of anything. I think they're going to be dead in the water if they allow that to happen. I don't see the Packers winning this game. If you're asking me to come up with a score, I like the Steelers to win by a score of about 33-16.
That sounds about right, and I think 16 might be pushing it there for the guys from Green Bay. Might get a couple of points and grubs. I don't know. I think it might be a little further fetched for Green Bay to come close to Pittsburgh in this game. I feel about them the complete opposite as I do about Detroit when it comes to a primetime game. There's no team that shows out more than the Pittsburgh Steelers under the lights. And these guys
yes.
know how to score. They know how to perform. They're all showmen out there. They've got, you know, the horses at wide receivers. We might not see Juju this week with the hamstring. But I mean, they've got a stable of wide receivers. And if there's one person, I think, who is it that I always say? I always say I want Larry King's primary care physician. I want the guy who picks wide receivers in the scouting department, who picks wide receivers for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Okay? Those are the two people I think are doing the best job right now. Because I think the only way the Pittsburgh Steelers lose this game is if that Bane and Batman movie breaks out in the middle of Heinz Field, and they're going to have to postpone it. That's probably the only way that the Pittsburgh Steelers don't dominate the Green Bay Packers. Headline tonight, Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, and I like the point. I like the point that you made about the Steelers in primetime. Over his last five primetime games, Ben Roethlisberger has thrown 16 touchdowns and only 2 interceptions.
Hashtag homework. Yeah, we take some weeks off, but we still got it. There's my man, Reverend Ralph, over there with the assist. I'm your boy, Joseph Haas, here. Make sure you follow him on Twitter, at Reverend Ralph. Catch him on LombardiAs.com as well for all of his reporting as well. You always catch him on the Green Bay Packers and a whole lot more. Make sure you catch him here every Sunday at 15 a.m. Eastern Standard Time for the Mancini Report. Well, it's always a pleasure having you on. Great talking football. Can't wait to hit you up again next week, man. Enjoy Sunday. Man, the season's almost over. Can you believe it?
Yeah, unreal, man. But, hey, it's crunch time, man. It's week 12. You know, this is where the contenders separate themselves from the pretenders. Should be fun to watch.
You got it. Thanks, Rev. What a great Sunday we are going to have in store. Awesome analysis by our buddy, the Reverend Ralph Mancini. Like I said, make sure you catch him on Twitter, at Reverend Ralph. Make sure you catch him on LombardiAv.com as well. So much football we got in there. Let me bounce the ball. Let me bounce it around the hard court real quick. Get you caught up on the NBA as it's concerned. Big game last night. Huge start for the New York Knicks, who, you know, many just thought, okay, with Carmelo being gone and everything, it's all Porzingis' team. And what's with Hardaway Jr. coming back? And how are they going to perform? All right, no Porzingis in Canada last night to get off to a hot start against the Houston Rockets, unable to keep James Harden and the gang under control. They end up blowing out the Knicks at home. It was a hot start for the Knicks, but cold second and third quarter. You follow a 39-point first quarter with a 22-point second quarter and a 13-point third quarter, and you're not going to win basketball games that way. So still a lot left to do in New York as far as basketball is concerned. A team that's really powering on is the Brooklyn Nets. They're always going to be competitive. I love the way they play ball. They're tough, gritty. Of course, great analysis by the guys, Capstra, and the coach, of course, Tim Capstra, and of course, Carino. Always love them on the radio. Great analysis post-game. You get the Nets post-game hashtag. You get Dr. Schwartz on there in the gang. Everybody having a good time. Very, very interesting team to watch this year, and they're going to win more games than people expect. That's one thing I'll continue to say, and it's been a fact about these Brooklyn Nets for the past two seasons. That is one team you do not want to play, home or road. They will give you their best, and that's what makes it for a very competitive basketball team, and one who's missing, you know, one of their top guys who goes down game one in Jeremy Lin. So being able to come around and recover from that and continue it is quite impressive by the Brooklyn Nets. Now, another very impressive team, a team that we've watched lose and lose and lose and lose and lose for the past few years. And finally, all these draft picks are on the court and they're playing and fun to watch. You're watching the Philadelphia 76ers, who are an interesting team in the East, and an East that's going to be, you know, unimpressive as far as star power is concerned, with just the Cavs and Celtics. Celtics finally, you know, losing a couple, you know, this week, but them going on a run. The Philadelphia 76ers are a very interesting team to watch. Joel Embiid, the great personality. They're off on the process. I trust in it, and it is going to be a fun ride this year. I'd love to see them sneak into the postseason as a, you know, 6, 7, 8 seed in the East, and just give these guys one chance at some playoff games. And I'd love to see what that Philly environment would sound like, would be like with this new group of young players taking them to the postseason, a place this team hasn't smelled in quite a while. Very shortly after, you know, one of their greats, Allen Iverson, inducted into the Hall of Fame. It'd be great to just get that whole 76ers kind of mojo back and going out there in Philly. They're a huge basketball up in town, down to the, you know, Temple Owls and the St. Joe's. Philly, basketball, I know New York's not like basketball, but basketball is definitely ingrained into Philly. You hear it in the hip-hop, you hear it in the rap as well. It's great to see the 76ers get back on the map as far as being a dominant team and being one of the teams you talk about in the NBA. It's been way too long, gang. All right, how about a team that is, like, they got a quick mention, but hot win streak to start the season, Boston Celtics. Only 3 losses on the season so far. Kyrie Irving has been, without a doubt, one of the most impressive players to start the season. I don't think any player has impressed me more, especially new face and new place, as Kyrie Irving has. And the way he's completely embraced being in Boston and taking the team on his shoulders, it's been impressive to watch. He hasn't lost, you know, you don't expect him to lose a step, but, I mean, this guy's handle is just one of the most ridiculous weapons any player has in the NBA. His ability to cross up opponents from one end to another, take it down the entire length of the court and be defended by all 5 guys and still somehow get it to the cup. And Kyrie Irving's game is so much about getting that ball to the glass and getting that ball to the hoop. I know it's not the same, but that mention of Allen Iverson, and then you watch a Kyrie Irving play, and man, the moves, the handle, the aggressiveness to get to the rim, and AI was clearly a smaller player than Kyrie Irving, but, you know, not by much. And that gives, you know, Kyrie a little bit more of an advantage, you know, up top and just getting by a couple of, but just to watch him and the way he is handled, the way he dissects the middle and late. It's what's impressive is not just his first dribble to break you down, but his ability to stutter, his ability to use his feet, maintain his dribble in the lane before getting to the glass. That's where he's just so impressive. He takes contact and is able to follow through. He played with LeBron James for so long that, you know, when Kyrie got this good, you really didn't notice it. And I noticed that he was just a great breakdown player. And, you know, if you got him the ball and allowed him to let his individual skills take over, that he was an outstanding athlete. But to be able to see him actually, you know, lead the team as well, go down in the fourth quarter and be the number one option. Everybody knows he's the number one option and still create, still get to the cup. Great things for Kyrie Irving in Boston. As far as I see right now, sky's the limit for him. And those Boston Celtics, they're running away with the one seed so far in the East. And you know, their only competitors, you know, teams like the Cleveland Cavaliers and, you know, look who's on the block now. But you've got the Sixers and teams like that. But you're gonna watch teams like the Pacers who can challenge, but they've shaken up their roster to the point where I don't believe they're going to be a competitive team, the competitive team they've been within recent years. So a lot to talk about as far as basketball and the NBA is concerned. We'll be hitting that throughout the weeks and leading up, especially into the All-Star break. And that's when I really start getting on it. I'm waiting for the Warriors to really get lit. Saw the town last night, the town court was awesome last night. The jerseys were amazing. I love that slate gray kind of look. It's an outstanding jersey. So love those town jerseys. Warriors doing it big on the court and off with the feedbacks as well. So we see JaVale McGee. If you don't follow JaVale McGee on Twitter, you're missing out on one of the funnier NBA players. He's always tweeting something silly, and he has absolutely no chill for his teammates as he and Steph Curry placed a couple of bets, and Steph Curry lost. So Steph Curry will be featured wearing fanny packs for the next week. Can't wait to see the next two as Steph Curry had to do his walk with the fanny pack, and it was utter hilarity. Steve Kerr's expression during it was priceless. That's worth the price of admission there. So go ahead, get ready. Warriors will play again in the next upcoming week. Usually at the top of the hour, we have our good buddy Brian Benway join us for the break. No Brian Benway this week, as he is on a plane. Yes, he is on a jet plane from the Palacio Estates in Jay, New York. From visiting Karen and everybody. So, hey, shout out to Karen. On his way back to Texas, so as he flies right now, trim safe travels. Hope he lands safe and sound. I'll take the last couple of minutes here of the show before we hit the top of the hour to wish everybody a great holiday season. Hope they're enjoying it so far with friends and family. You know, I hate being so, so far away from all those people that I grew up and loved so much, but I'm glad to say that I'm here with a bunch of people that I love as well. And having an amazing time and enjoying the holiday season as well. So I want to send my love out to all of you. God bless. Go Jets. I'm going to turn this up, and I'm going to take us home.
Diversity Music Group. Alex H. Alex H. The Bomb Factory.
Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to properly introduce the most incredible beast from the east, live and live in color, in shape, fitted to leather and soft butter. Color up, my dollars up, I'm winning exotic cars to women, women and more women. More sinning, I'm addicted to success, blessed, young and gifted, the bar's been lifting. Started from the bottom, I'm now on top of the world. Look, my, I made it, the new most hated, underestimated since I haven't been painting. Our stories are unrelated, so they don't believe. But who cares? I'ma run a few years before I fade to black. My impact shift back to order to lyrical manslaughter in the first degree. I am here.
Everybody stay safe out there this holiday season. All right. Talk to y'all real soon. Hashtag GAWS. And we all